You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
We are back with more of the Steam Room podcast after a little hiatus, as Charles and I, by the way, this is Ernie Johnson,
well, that's
Charles
Barkley. Can you call it a hiatus if we were actually working?
Yeah, but it was a hiatus from the show.
I mean, but we were actually—
From the show, we were working March Madness.
Okay.
And we survived it again, Chuckster.
We survived it again?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a lot of work for a month and a lot of fun for a month watching all those games.
More work than fun.
Well, work can be fun.
It all depends
on your approach to your job. It was fun.
It's always fun, but it was more work than fun. I just want to clarify that.
Yeah, it was. It was a lot of work.
Okay.
Okay. Welcome back.
I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to be back to my crappy job that's not really a lot of work at all.
We always start the podcast, the Steam Room, with Charles' favorite phrase, which is first of all, which can apply even if it's the eighth point he's making. So
yes, I got a lot, Ernie.
Oh, great.
I got a lot.
All right, what's leading off?
The women of the NCAA. This is a pro and con. I want to congratulate the women for making me watch great basketball from beginning to end.
I was locked in.
I was too. I've never watched two straight games before, ever. And I want to congratulate the women of South Carolina. Shout out to Dawn Staley, just an amazing woman. The ladies of Virginia Tech. I want to congratulate the women of Iowa and LSU and say thanks for putting on an amazing show.
How does Kim Mulkey do it, man?
She's just a great coach.
That's amazing.
And you better be a great coach when you dress like that.
You're not a fan of her wardrobe?
I like the way she dresses, but it's something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't say it was good or bad. It's something.
She's being her.
But I like her.
Yeah.
I like her as a coach. But I just want to congratulate the women on putting on a great show on the basketball court. But also, everything that's happened after the games was total bullshit.
We've really relaxed our any restrictions we've had on language on the podcast.
Yeah, I like that because I want to get the dramatic effect. Because
yeah, that is dramatic.
All the positive stuff that they did for women basketball, for me, got lost in all the noise afterwards.
It didn't get lost for me, but I think it distracted from celebrating the championship.
From Caitlin Clark's greatness and LSU greatness.
Yeah.
Which are the two things that we should be talking about instead of the John Cena face thing, the ring finger, and who's going to the White House.
Right.
You know, I just think personally, I'm not going to say who's right or wrong because everybody deserves some blame, but I just think they made too much noise that took away from their greatness. And it bothered me because they made me watch basketball, women basketball, for hours. You know, I've watched select games at times, but it was great basketball. It was great storylines. And I just thought all the BS afterwards just distracted from the greatness.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
Yeah. So,
do you have an issue with Angel Reese?
No, because Caitlin Clark started it. Two wrongs don't make a right. But I just thought it took away from Caitlin's greatness and Reese's greatness and Kim Mulkey's greatness. Because what happens Ernie, you know, we work with fools in the media. You know, they gonna make it about good versus evil, black against white. And what happens is when you throw it out there, you bring stupidity into the equation and the noise just get louder. And that's what, instead of celebrating their greatness, we're just dealing with noise. And then, like I said, then you bring the president and the first lady in. And I'm like, please, y'all, can we just celebrate these ladies' greatness? They made people enjoy. And like you think
you made it appointment TV. I mean, I'm sitting at the Final Four on that Friday night.
Yes.
Doing some work in the room, just getting ready for Saturday. And I'm saying, okay, what time's this game? Okay, what time's that? I'm going to make sure you had to watch it.
You had to watch.
You couldn't miss it.
And I was like, I had to, you know, shout out to Zach Brown. I'm a big Zach Brown fan. I had to go to the TNT part and listen to Zach Brown. I'm like, I'm not leaving this place until these two games are over. I've never said that before. Hey, I'm going to stay and watch both of these games before I go see Zach Brown, who's awesome.
Okay, now what else you got?
Okay, I just want to give March Madness another shout out to our comrades at CBS.
Always fun to work with those guys.
Those guys and girls who give us all those stats, not just at the Final Four and doing March Madness, but throughout the year. Shout out to all of them. I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. And, you know, Ernie, you're great. Clark is amazing. The incomparable Greg Gumbel, Wally Zerbiak.
Jay Wright.
Jay Wright was amazing. You know, the only thing I have problem
Seth
with
Seth Davis. Is, I mean, the
Seth
list
Davis,
goes on.
Andy Candace. Candace, yes. You know, the only thing problem with Jay Wright, I go from being the best-looking guy to the second-best-looking guy. That's the only thing I hate about Jay Wright being on there. I mean, when I'm with you and Greg and Kenny and Clark, I know I'm the best-looking by far, by far. And then I drop down to number two when Jay gets on there. So that's a little painful, but thanks for all the people at CBS.
What did you just say? I wasn't paying attention. I'm sorry. Hey, okay, what's next?
Well, listen to the podcast. It'll be repeated. So I want to talk about the Masters. I'm excited for the Masters. It's starting today. But I want to say something to the PGA Tour. They're just being whiny. The shots they're taking at the LIV guys, the announcers especially some of the shots they're taking at Phil Mickelson, I think it's unfair. And let's be realistic. Phil Mickelson has been the second greatest thing in golf the last 30 years after Tiger Woods. He's been the second best player, probably been the best ambassador for golf the last 30 years. Hey, man, those guys went to LIV. I wish them nothing but the best. That should be the PGA Tours and talk about calling them, you know, sellouts, money grubbers. Hey, man. And in the NFL, some guys went to the USFL. You know, they got a better opportunity. In the NBA, some guys went to the ABA. That don't make them bad. You know, even the NFL, some guys went to the AFL back in the day. But I think some of the attacks on the LIV guy have been personal.
How about the attacks? I mean, how about the impression that they've gone to a place where, okay, now there's no cut. Now there's, that it's not what professional golfers have done. They're not playing the same tournaments. They're not playing the same way.
Well, they're not, but they took another job. And you don't have to badmouth guys. They took a better job. And we're all not all in the same financial situation. So I don't blame those guys that live. Actually, three or four of them asked me my advice. I said, yo, man, we're not going to get into a contest of where money's coming from. Then nobody in this country would be working if we want to do that. And but I think some of the attacks on the LIV guys have been unfair. And especially on Phil Mickelson. Like I said, he's been the greatest golf player, second best player in golf the last 30 years. He's been a great ambassador. And let me tell you something. I can't wait to watch. I want chaos. I want a LIV guy to win the Masters. That's what I want. I want a LIV guy to win the Masters. So that's the last thing I'm going to say. I got two more things.
That's the last thing you're going to say. I got two more things. Another first of all. Go ahead.
You know, basketball means a lot to me. I was too stupid to do anything else. I didn't know what it's like to have a real job. I bless these young guys. Whatever y'all do, how much money y'all make, God bless you. I made more money than Bill Russell. He was better. Wilt, Kareem, guys like that. But I have a problem with our commissioner having to bribe you guys to make 50, because when this new deal gets done, y'all gonna be making 60, 70, 80 million dollars. He has to bribe y'all to play 65 games. Come on, man. We're playing basketball. We're not teachers. We're not firemen. We're not policemen. We're not in the armed service. We don't work at the steel mill. For Adam, and I like Adam a lot, for him have to bribe guys making 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 million dollars a year to say you got to play 65 basketball. First of all, it should be at least 70, in my opinion.
This is to qualify for regular season awards.
And you know, guys
play 75% of the game, 65 games.
And you know, guys going to play 65 games now. That's going to be their regular season. But
it's not all on the player.
Yeah.
No, it's not all on the player.
Listen,
we're in a time, Chuckster, where the medical staff, everybody is always weighing in. They're saying no, he shouldn't play. No, you know, there's a lot of that going on too.
So when Bill Russell, Kareem.
No, look, I know.
When those guys played 82 games, I'm just saying.
I know, but don't. I'm just warning you that you're about to step on the lawn and say get off.
I am. That's what I'm going to do. If those guys can play 82 games in crap sneakers.
Chuck, I understand totally where you're coming from.
I'm just saying. In crap sneakers, busing places, flying commercial, taking trains.
And still lacing them up every night.
Didn't have great medical, the stuff we have today. I just think these guys are so lucky and blessed, and bless them. I was blessed too. But to make the kind of money they make today, to have to bribe them to win
65 out of 82 games.
Come on, man. I just have a problem with that. So
I'm with you. But I also don't think it's all a player problem.
Well,
I think a lot of guys would like to play more if medical staffs were not saying, no, he can't. He needs a rest. He can't play this. You know, I think there's too much of that going on.
Yeah, okay. We'll agree on that. So the last thing is, man, I got to admit, I'm liking the baseball changes.
Sure.
I'm loving the baseball changes.
Any amount of an increased pace of play, I'm all for.
And I don't think it's unreasonable.
No.
They cut 30 minutes. I think I saw the stat. They've cut 30 minutes off 95% of the game so far this year. And listen, I think it's great. I can't wait to start watching more games. I'm probably going to go to more games. My Phillies are struggling right now.
Ooh, yeah, it's
my boy Reese.
1-5 start, something like that.
Reese Hoskins is out. He tore his ACL. Bryce Harper's out. You know, so we getting in a hole. We can't because, man, the Braves are for real. The Mets are for real.
Mets just got swept by the Brewers.
I know. But, you know, they missing Verlander. But, you know, the best thing my Phillies got going for them is the Washington Nationals. We're going to always be better than them.
Hey, so that's a wide-ranging first of all.
And now, hockey playoffs. Starting soon, NBA playoffs, best time of the year.
And now we're going to take a short break. Yeah, and when we come back.
This is big here.
Yeah, you almost gave away the guess.
This is big.
Yeah, but we'll be right back. We are back on the Steam Room. Chuckster, you know what I did yesterday?
What did you do yesterday, Ryan?
I got up on Wednesday morning, and it was the day that the film Air came out in theaters. And I never go to theaters anymore. But I said, you know what? In advance of our podcast Thursday, I'm going to go to the theater at 10 o'clock in the morning.
I always go in the morning.
At Hamilton Mill out by my house. And I'm going to watch Air. And it was awesome.
The reviews have been fantastic.
Well, add mine to it. Okay. I thought it was a great story, really well told, and just it was really, really good. And so I went because shoot, Ben Affleck's going to be on the podcast.
This is probably our biggest star.
I would have to agree.
I mean,
I would have
to agree. Tom Brady,
yeah,
Peyton, Sally Field,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Fauci,
yeah.
But this is probably our biggest star, I will admit.
How about that? Anything else you want to say to butter him up to?
Well, it's just a fact.
Yeah.
This is actually like a movie star.
Yeah. Ben, thanks for taking a few minutes with us, man. We appreciate you. How are you?
Too kind to me. Those are extremely generous words. Just as this is the high point of my tour promoting this movie, getting the opportunity to sit down with both of you, in particular, my friend Charles, whom Matt and I dedicated an Easter egg homage that's been buried in this film. And Charles will eventually see the movie. And when he does, I think will find it funny.
Yeah.
Or else I'm in trouble.
Man, it was really a great watch, man. And I was wondering, I mean, you directed this movie, and I'm wondering, how much did you know of the story before you said, hey, this would be a great film?
You know, I really didn't know. I was pretty young, and also like the media and the whole thing wasn't that tuned into the behind the scenes of things like shoe deals in 1984. You know, that was kind of just inside baseball, I think. In retrospect, people have gotten interested in that deal, but I just haven't really known about it. And so I kind of discovered it. And also part of it was I wanted to kind of take this story and make a larger sort of like fable, you know, kind of story out of it. It's tough. And you're trying to condense something to 2 hours. That was a long business negotiation and so forth. But, you know, it was a lot of fun. And I loved the actors that were in it. I knew it was a real challenge to take that and make a kind of funny, fast sort of, you know, surprising story out of it. And I was, look, you know, I remember that draft class, as I know Charles probably does as well. And it was fascinating. I mean, the whole story of all the players drafted that year, and really it was a story in large part about like what people think is going to happen, what we expect to happen, how we get there, and how in retrospect we tend to look back and change it, you know, and imagine it differently in some ways. And it's a fascinating example just because you look at the order of the draft, you know, which we make a thing out of, you know, where you have Akeem and then Bowie and then Jordan. You know, I think the fifth kid drafted was
he's a good looking dude. That's all I know about the fifth
draft pick. He hosts a podcast called The Steam Room.
I can't remember all your roles, but let me just ask, is it harder to just act or play an actual person?
I mean, I think I really admire actors that, like, you get your, you know, look, I've seen Viola Davis in the movie, she do that incredibly, Daniel Day-Lewis, Sean Penn. I kind of feel comfortable sort of in the middle where, like, playing Phil Knight, who I didn't know and hadn't met and only kind of read about, I was like, well, I don't want to try to, you know, reproduce all his, like, every little personality trait. It was more interesting that this guy from his books and stuff was, you know, they kind of started this sort of what they want to be like a revolutionary kind of upstart hippie kind of jogging company with values and Buddhist sort of beliefs and form from Asia. And then all of a sudden they were running like a very successful running company and had to be sort of corporate and responsible. And with like Phil Knight, for example, you know, more important than like getting his exact details right, because while he's very well known, people don't know every little nuance of his behavior. You know, there's this thing where like people want to kind of make fun of the boss. You know what I mean? The guy at the top. And there had to be someone in the movie kind of who was skeptical of the whole thing, who kind of represented the overall skepticism that particular deal faced. And so I made elected to make Phil that principal character and then just kind of more had fun with it. You know what I mean? I thought, what are ways in which I can use kind of some of these character traits to have fun, to allow the other people that are working there to kind of give him a hard time, but also tip the hat to the deal that he made and the fact that he did, you know, take that step, which was really significant.
Chuckster, how much did you know about Michael at that point? I mean, when you guys are both coming out.
We bonded because when I went to the 84 Olympic trials, we had 120 people and we go 120, 180, 60, 40, 20, 16. So I spent the whole time, and me and Michael, for some reason, clicked. And I remember I got cut. So I'm going to the airport with John Stockton, Karl Malone, and Terry Porter and myself. And a couple weeks later, I got a call from John Thompson. He says, hey, John Thompson called. He wanted to speak to you. Can you come to my office? They called my coach, Sonny. He said, Sonny, I want to apologize. He says, Charles was the second best player at the Olympic trials, but Bobby just hated him for some reason. We ask him every day, why do you hate him? He says, he's not going to be on the team. You guys can let that go. And I remember telling my coach, I said, Coach, I told you I played great. But to answer your question, after John hangs up the phone.
You're talking about Bobby Knight.
Yes. After he hangs up the phone, my coach said, I thought you were the best player in the country. I said, well, I'm damn sure not. I said, Coach, I just saw the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. I said, there's a guy, he's about an inch taller than me. He can outrun everybody. He can outjump everybody. He said, what's his name? I said, his name is Michael Jordan. I said, Coach, I kind of seen him a couple times, but at that time we were all in love with the Big East. I said, Coach, I've never seen a guy run that fast and jump that high. So that was my first Michael Jordan moment.
Yeah. And so, Ben, you capture that in this film. And when you look at the big picture and the impact of that one deal, what comes to your mind?
There's a couple of things. One, now we kind of take for granted that like people are kind of brands, right? Like your brand, what do you mean? That word is synonymous with those two things are synonymous. And at the time, really prior to that deal, the idea of a person and a brand were very separate. Brands didn't have meaning. You know, Cheerios was Cheerios and Goodyear were tires and blimps. And it didn't have any other deeper resonance or meaning. And just the idea that you could attach something that you were essentially selling people and create value in that attachment by the brand becoming the association with a person and what a person does, how they live, and then the fact that there's no way they could have foreseen the astonishing luck that person, the first time they really experiment with this, is Michael Jordan, who in fact becomes so meaningful, like more meaningful in terms of just excellence and beauty and grace and greatness and power, and all, represents all these things, was incredibly lucky and seems incredibly almost kind of coincidental, sort of one of those things where everything kind of came together, and all the facets of that story have these kind of magical things where you know little curiosities about them and oddities, and I thought that was kind of interesting because it's like there's a certain nebulous mystery about how do these things kind of happen? How did these shoes that came to be this thing and this player and all that and this company all be connected? And at the same time, really the most significant part of it is that, albeit not enough as I think is fair, and I don't think we've arrived at that point, but the shift in terms of capitalism and selling things shifted for the first time from like the idea, I'm just going to pay you, to the idea of you were going to actually participate in the benefits we receive from your work,
right?
Image, meaning. And that's hugely important because if you don't do that, it's exploitative in a very serious way. And I'm sure many, many athletes, I'm sure you guys know plenty of people who created a lot of value at various points in their life and were left with less than they deserved from that experience, you know? And I think we kind of sense that that's profoundly unfair. And that's why I think the Biolis character and what the Jordan family with David Falk and, you know, the whole team there did to try to start the process, because it's about precedence, right? The first time somebody does it, it makes it easier for the next person and the next person.
So as far as trying to – who did you talk to about learning to be Phil Knight? Because Chris Tucker was driving me freaking nuts. He's like – He calls me like, yo, man.
That's funny because he said you kept calling him.
Yeah, okay.
He was like, man, Charles.
Hey, you know, Ben, it was the weirdest thing because he says, Charles, tell me about Hira White. I was like, man, he's like the uncle, the older brother, father figure to me and Michael. Like every time you screw up, he calls you. He's always got your back. But every time you do something stupid, which I did more stupid stuff than Michael, he's coming to visit you. And he's going to break your balls. But he's always positive when he does it. And Chris would kept, and I was trying to explain that to Chris.
Well, wait till you see how Chris Tucker portrays him too, man. It's awesome.
Howard is like the big brother, father figure that we never had. I mean, yeah. Michael did, I didn't. And he's just amazing. So, but I was asking, Ben, who did you talk to come to Phil?
Well, there's a lot of like stuff available about Phil, but actually I talked to Howard quite a bit. And as you know, Howard is very communicative and very positive and kind of a, you know, almost like an evangelist and of his vision and positivity. Howard himself, by the way, has an incredible life. I was like, wow, somebody should make your life story. This is amazing. Which I can't even go into, but the guy's he's faced incredible things and been through all this. And he remains like really positive and kind and really persuasive. And that was really what I was trying to get across, was the kind of, as he communicated to me without sort of saying it explicitly. But one thing it felt like really interesting to me, like, okay, these companies, for example, this like largely white jogging company in Oregon, needed to have African-American athletes in order to communicate with a lot of these young men who are coming up in to the NBA, to have them feel comfortable and feel like that who they were was kind of reflected and understood and appreciated at Nike. And also at the same time, you know, it reminded me of things that you see in show business sometimes, which is people becoming very sort of what feels like overnight at a very young age, successful and having access to a lot of things they didn't have access to and a lot of choices that they have to face with big life consequences that you just, you know, as a young man, I don't know, very, very few of us are equipped to make extremely wise choices at 22 years old. I only became able to do that last year, but it's a lot to ask Howard character as a representative of kind of the recognition of the need to like to actually have these companies inside reflect who they were advertising on the outside, and his mother's character as a representative of like, hey, you know, the people, the young men in the NBA, for example, and I suspect this is true across sports and entertainment and a lot of areas where it's like you grow up and you're all of a sudden, as a young guy or woman, you get all this opportunity. You need to have been brought up and supported and to continue to have ongoing support to help you figure this stuff out, because it's a lot. It's a big change.
You know, Matt Damon plays Sonny Vaccaro in this, and Sonny Vaccaro is the guy who's all in on, we've got to get Michael Jordan. So Matt's great in the film. You guys go back so far, Ben. You remember the first time you met Matt?
Yeah, I think I was 8 years old. I don't know, the first time I was playing basketball probably at the park, and he moved to a couple of blocks away. And, you know, when you're like 8 and 10, that's like the bigger kid, you know what I mean? He was like a really older, like for a while, he was like one of those older kids and play the older league, you know, the older division in baseball and stuff like that. So, you know, because that's such a big difference at that age, it was kind of like a little bit of a distance. And then until we kind of like around 13, or I was like 12, 13, we kind of started hanging out more, and then really got close when we ended up, and I got to high school. He was a junior and I was a freshman, and we were interested in a lot of the same things. And, you know, the truth about Matt is I'd love to kind of give him shit and give him a hard time, but he's just a good guy. He's been a good friend to me and kind, and he's a good man, and he's been that way his whole life. You know, I mean, he's done some, you know, we all have our eccentricities, which is part of what I think is fun about these stories, like about this Nike story. You want to tell stories that have vulnerability, that have real people, that do stupid things, that make mistakes, that don't always know the right answers, but that there's a kind of passion and compassion there and affinity for one another. And that's what I really liked. And that's why the friendship that I have with Matt, that's been now, you know, like God forever, you know,
more than 40 years,
whatever,
yeah.
Is really meaningful. You can feel it.
Give me a peek behind the curtain. I mean, when you guys are, and you have such a long working relationship with each other, are there times where you butt heads?
You know, we don't have that kind of like collaboration. I know some people do, whether it's sports, you know, or collaborations anyway, you know, where there either has to be kind of a leader, like a dictator, like you guys mentioned the Bobby Knight example, obviously, from what I understand, you know, is very autocratic, or there has to be a a leader on the floor or something. Like, whereas with the collaborations that I find most successful in terms of making movies, they're really about, and I'd be curious, Charles, if you think this is like analogous to sports, but like one of the interesting things I found is the more relaxed people are, the more at ease they are, the better they perform, the more comfortable they are and fluid they are. And they just access that part of them. If they have that talent that just lets them kind of do it without almost thinking. And when guys get tight, you know, when there's like a nervousness or you better perform or, you know, I feel like that leads to a stiffness. So me and Matt have always had a very easy back and forth thing. We kind of make decisions based on like, whichever one really, I guess you feel that strongly about it. All right, let's try it. The benefit of movies versus like, you know, for example, sports is like, we can do another take on the last shot of the game. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, you're 100% correct. The less pressure you can take off guys, the much better. Because the worst thing can happen, not just in basketball, in sport, sometimes guys try too hard. And I used to hate playing at home, not at home, my city. I hated coming to Atlanta because like 30 of my friends from high school in my hometown came over and I wanted to play great. And I ended up playing like shit all the time. I was like, man, these guys see me on TV. I know I'm a great player. My mom, my dad, all my high school friends and my homeboys come. And I was so stressed out the day of the game. I was like, man, I want y'all to see how great I am at basketball. So the key is to control your stress level.
That's exactly. When actors are trying too hard, everyone's pushing too hard. There's nothing worse than trying to be funny, right? Or anytime it, like in a movie, you leaning forward, the audience feels like that you're trying to sell them something. You just turn off. And also, it's like it's that tightness thing. It's like it's that Jordan championship game, passing the ball to the guy on the other team. Like the more anxiety and stress you have, the something gets in the way of whatever that kind of gift is that you just want to be in touch with. And this movie, I had like, you know, I'm Viola, Jason Bateman, Matt Damon, Chris Messina, you know, Chris Tucker. Like, I was like, you guys just have fun. Just feel comfortable. And the easier it felt and the smoother it was, the better it got, to the point where I could tell the actors were like, this hardly feels like work. Like, we feel bad. Was it good? Did we come in? Because we've kind of just been around, you know?
What's the difference between being an actor in a movie and being an actor director? I mean, that's good. You got a lot of hats on.
It's a big difference because, like, Chris Tucker was always called like the player coach, which I guess there is an analogy to, because if you are a player coach, obviously you're not just running the plays. I mean, you've got all kinds of other things to think about, including the politics, including the strategy, including the ownership, including, you know, whatever it is that coaches have to think about. And as a director, the advantage is that you need to get most of the work actually for a movie done in prep, like beforehand, because you can only change about 10-15% on the day. Most of what it's going to be is now kind of set in stone based on the script, the people you've cast, you know, the people you've hired, the way things look. And then there's a little bit of luck involved. What I found when I first started directing, it was like so stressful and overwhelming. I was like, I can't be in my first movie, and I'm glad I wasn't, because but as I've gotten more comfortable and just learned more and gotten more at ease, I now find myself acting in movies, having to sort of tell myself, like, you're not directing a movie, go back to your trailer, sit down.
Hey, during your tour and doing press for this movie, Air, which is in theaters now, by the way, folks, I saw a clip of you speaking Spanish fluently. And it occurred to me as we got ready for this that, you know, you and the Chuckster have something in common, because Charles has for many years prided himself in saying that he's going to learn to speak Spanish.
I've been busy, so, Ernie.
You've been busy,
I've
I know.
Been busy.
You've been busy the last 20 years that you said you're going to learn.
Actually, about 40 years.
Yeah, but still, if you say you're going to learn it, to learn it.
Been busy too.
Fluent is an exaggeration, because if you actually speak Spanish and you hear me talk, you'd be like,
Well, wait till you hear Chuckster. Throw him some of your best, Chuck. Come on.
Muy bien, gracias.
And there you have it. That's it.
That's not very good, Charles. However, as I want to get to, because I don't know how long I'm going to have to wait for Charles to actually see the movie.
No, I promise. I'm seeing it tomorrow. Actually,
I think you slid a probably in there almost.
No, well,
are you probably going to see it, or are you going to play golf tomorrow?
No, it's going to rain all day tomorrow. But I just got to make sure they got a time before the Masters come on.
I'll make sure, Charles. Whatever they need to do, they do for you.
Yes,
you're in the movie. I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah, I've already heard. Well, I've already heard. That's okay.
I handpicked some photographs. The first picture we had was you eating a cheeseburger. So me and Matt looked at it for a while. We really enjoyed that picture, but we felt like it may be bordering on unrealistic that would be the picture that they would use of you, because we were trying to find pictures where you didn't look so handsome. So, because, like, remember, you know, it was before Barkley was the Adonis that we know now. We were trying to find some funnier images. We didn't end up settling on a more realistic one.
Here's the thing, Chuckster. I don't want to give anything away, and I don't know what I'm prohibited from saying, but there is a great line about the Chuckster.
There's a line where a man looks at Charles Barkley as a prospect for drafting, and he makes a very confident declaration about Charles's future and what is in destiny. And it's about foresight and wisdom and the way that people are very sure about the way things are going to end up. And I want you to know that the joke, Charles, is that the man is profoundly wrong, you see.
Ben, you're telling me I can't say the line. I got to let just people...
You can say it to him. I think he probably already knows.
Nobody wants to see him on television.
I've heard you.
I laughed out loud in the theater.
Nobody wants to see Charles Barkley on TV. It's funny because Charles is probably unequivocally the best, most interesting athlete ever to turn commentator, broadcaster, ever, because of his candor, wisdom, and entertainment value.
Without question. He changed the landscape.
What's crazy about why I'm excited to see the movie, it's my life. Because we both go to Nike. Because, me, you know, I'm in that same class. And obviously, they signed Michael, and they signed me. So I'm there when all this shit is happening. And clearly, and I'm still with Nike to this day, and Michael gave me some great advice one time. Michael said, we were playing golf one summer, and I think at the time I was making about $3 million a year from Nike, if I remember correctly. And Michael's always been a great businessman. He says, hey, man, why you need all that money? I said, dude, what you talking about? He says, I was looking at your contract. You're making about $3 million. Tell Nike you want $1 million and you want the rest in stock options. And I said,
Thank you, Michael.
Hell yeah. I said, okay, I'll run it by my guys. And I said, hey, guys, I was talking to Michael. He said, instead of me taking $3 million, he wants me to take $1 million and the rest in stock. He says, well, that's a good idea if they're going to be great. I says, what do you think? You think? I said, this dude's the greatest basketball player I've ever seen. Let's do it.
Just do it.
Yeah. And so I actually made probably 10 times the amount of money because it split. Because I got, if I remember correctly, I got those options like at $35. And they've split over 100 probably 10 times since 1984-85. So this whole movie, one, I'm excited to see it. I'm spending time with Phil Knight. Actually, I spend more time with Howard and Sonny. So I'm excited to see what was really going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, we're going to let you go with one other thing, Ben. Chuck is a donut connoisseur. He prefers Krispy Kreme. You're more of a Dunkin' Donuts guy. I know.
I am. And that confuses me, Charles, because you have such good taste otherwise.
Well, first of all, Dunkin' Donuts, they're cake. They're not donuts. They're cake.
Whatever you will call it, it's good.
I didn't say it was bad. It's not as good as that. First of all, let me tell you something.
First of all, when
you see that little hot sign, you got to stop in Krispy Kreme. That's unfair marketing. Nobody can resist the hot sign at Krispy Kreme. I've tried Dunkin' Donuts. They're good donuts, but they're more cake.
I'm a Dunkin' guy.
They're more cake.
Coffee is what I really love and go for, but next time I see you, Charles, I'm going to bring you some donuts. I'm going to put you to the taste test. I'm going to have them see if they can make a personal Barclay special donut.
Well, just for the record, Ben, we've had a...
Make sure it's really big.
They tried to trick me with different donuts over the years. I can tell a Krispy Kreme like anybody's business, brother. Thank you for being on the podcast, man.
Well, like Michael said, I hope you're getting paid for your endorsement.
Hey, listen, man, Michael has made me, thanks to Nike, and I'm excited to see the movie, man, and continued success. And thank you for being on here with me and Crazy Ernie.
Thank you, Charles. It's a pleasure and a joy. And I look forward to coming on here because I thought it would be, it's such a fun. I've had pleasure being around you and enjoying your company from time to time. It always makes me feel so good. And I love what you do on you. I really do believe you are the very best. And you tell the truth and you're a joy to listen to and watch. And that's why I wanted to try to tip the hat to you in this movie because of you. And also, Howard, maybe when I'm after at some point later down the road, you can tell the show story that Howard told me about when you called him and he had set you up with Moses Malone and Moses had you working out. Let's see if that's true or not.
He saved my life, because I, you know, at the time I was 300 pounds and Moses, who I called dad, he made me lose 50 pounds. It changed the whole dynamic of my life and my career. Howard, he got Moses. He says, because I wasn't getting to play. Because, you know, I played at 300 pounds in college and had great success, but you can't play in the NBA at 300 pounds. And so, yeah, him hooking me up with Moses Malone changed the entire trajectory of my career.
Ben Affleck, thank you much, man. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was awesome, man.
Yes, indeed.
I can't wait to see the movie. It's going to be so crazy, like, because I'm going to know everybody in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's crazy.
No, it's good. Yes. You'll love it. Well, the steam room is about to take a legendary turn because the legendary longtime producer of Inside the NBA, Tim Kiley, aka TK, joins us.
When me and Ernie were busting our hump on Mars Madness, how was spring break?
You obviously don't pay attention to any other screen except the one you're on.
First of all, we're on four of them. We're not on one screen.
So were we. Yeah. Trust me.
Yeah.
Trust me. Ask Ernie about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know Ernie was working. Oh, you were working too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. They have different shifts for the producers. So Jeremy would be in there. Keith would be in there.
Wait,
TK?
Different shifts. Well, we don't get different shifts.
What are you talking about? You go to Faces and Names and get whacked out of your brain.
You're making me work 12 hours a day. I can't get a pop, as Ernie says. I work 12 hours. I go in a building at 10:30 in the morning and don't get out to 12:30 at night. I don't deserve a pop.
Ernie says you get half a day.
We'll come have a pop.
Let's go have a pop.
Well, I'm smiling outside, and I know Ernie is too, but I do have a bone to pick with you.
Uh-oh.
60 Minutes. I never thought Charles would be so devious. Only one bite of Ernie, and you cut me out. You cut me out of the piece.
Wait, you think I edited the piece?
Absolutely. You had rights over all of it.
No,
it's your piece.
Nope. I did not have any control over any part of it.
There was no editorial.
No.
I didn't know. I was just in there for one bite.
Yeah, just one bite. Okay. It was probably really good.
What about Kenny and Shaq? Bite. They're not whining and complaining like you are.
Well, I don't make their money.
Nope.
It's just what? Charles. Go on, Charles.
You had editorial control.
Nope. Exactly. And I will tell you this. I watched 60 Minutes religiously. It was an honor and a privilege to be on that show.
Yeah.
I agree. It was an honor to be interviewed, but I'm still pissed.
Okay.
Well, maybe they're going
to feel better now. I'm feeling better now, Ernie. Get that off your chest there.
Legend.
There you go.
Maybe when it comes out on DVD, they're going to put you in there to be longer.
That's true, yeah. I get the...
You can watch the entire thing on CBS. Yes. Including the one-on-one with Tim Kiley.
You want me to call him?
Yeah, no, that's fine, Charles. Okay. You don't have to go any further than that. I just wanted to make sure you were paying attention to everything that was going on in the world. The Masters. You spoke of the Masters
earlier.
Yes,
go live. Go live, guys. Please live, guys. One of y'all win.
Did you guys both see? I thought it was kind of almost a little sad, a little poignant. Tiger saying, he may not be able to play the Masters much anymore.
Well, I think that I saw that, but I hope he plays the Masters. First of all, I hope he plays the Senior Tour. He's the greatest golfer ever. And anytime he plays, it's great for the game. Hey, it's going to be difficult for him to win against those young kids. And let me tell you something, one of the greatest days of my life, I actually got to play the Masters last year during the playoffs.
You played Augusta National.
I did. And let me tell you.
You didn't play in the Masters.
The Black Masters.
Well,
oh, yeah.
That's it. The Black Masters. Yeah. And just for the record, I am getting ready to ramp up my practice schedule.
Uh-oh.
Because, you know, I was in New York for 2 weeks. In
March Madness.
And so, I'm getting ready to ramp up my practice routine for the Black Masters.
Well, that's right. I'm glad to hear that because I wanted to get Ernie's take on, I know pretty much what the normal Black Masters dinner is.
Yeah.
Which is barbecue.
Barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because
Cheryl Ann is just awesome.
Yeah, she's the greatest. Yeah. But my question is it's a big deal with the golfers. It's who they pick. The Masters winner has to set the menu.
As the champions dinner.
Yes. As the champions dinner. And
Scottie Scheffler.
Yes, Scottie Scheffler will be doing it this year. But hands down, the worst dinner apparently was Bubba Watson. Who just had fried chicken.
Well, what's wrong with fried chicken?
Hold on. Mashed potatoes. That's what I'm bringing up with you two guys, because I know what you like.
Just let him finish, Chuckster.
Fried chicken, mashed potatoes, corn, macaroni, and cheese. And Nick Faldo called it a happy meal.
Oh, no.
Well, that's first of all, he don't know what a real happy meal is. I do agree one thing. He should have had a different type of meat or like a fish for other people.
Ooh.
Like Scheffler had a fish, if I remember correctly, and a steak. I mean, because guys eat different things. You can't assume everybody going to eat fried chicken.
I do like me some fried chicken.
Yeah, if it's done right.
Oh, yeah.
You can't eat anybody's fried chicken.
You can't eat anybody's fried chicken.
You can't.
Or you mean you can't eat just anybody's fried chicken.
Yes.
Be made correctly.
Yeah.
Yes, because a lot of people don't cook it. They cook it too fast, and it gets crispy on the outside, and it's still not great done. You have to take your time, brother. And make sure the inside.
Do you fry chicken?
No.
Then what are you talking about?
I'll go to restaurants or order fried chicken, and it has to be. It's like a buffalo. Yeah. It's like wings.
Yeah.
Wings. I love
but you shouldn't,
wings.
You shouldn't be giving advice on how long to cook or how hot to cook stuff. You don't do it. Obviously, you don't want it crispy on the outside and raw on the inside. That makes you sick.
And that's the way a lot. It's not raw, but it's not totally
done.
It's
undercooked, and that's not good for you.
That's right. Same thing with wings. I'm a wings aficionado.
Yeah.
And
what about them?
Well, sometimes they don't cook them well in the center either.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you have to be really
don't
careful.
Don't go to those places.
You got to try them. There's a new place up here called Urban Wings that just opened. I can't wait to try it. It's up on Piedmont. It's called Urban Wings. I hope their wings are good.
I hope their wings are good.
Let's get some brought into the studio. We'll try them out.
Okay. That's right. We should. Okay. We'll have catered. For each of you guys, since I know you're a voter. MVP. Who's your MVP?
Well, I'm going to say this here. I hate that these fools on other networks have brought race into question and things like that. My honest opinion, I think you give it to any of the three and I would not be upset.
I've got a vote. I have not sent my ballot in yet. And you wouldn't believe, this is one of the toughest years of all time for me.
Ever.
In balloting. And I've drawn up charts, comparing numbers, all that kind of stuff. And I'm leaning a certain way. I'm not, I'm just about ready to do that. But my toughest part is the All-NBA teams. Because you got to do three All-NBA teams.
I got a question for you.
And there have been so many guys missing games.
I got to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Because I'm going to blow a gasket because this guy's not going to make probably one of the first two teams, and he should. Shai Gilgeous.
No, he is on my ballot.
Yes, he should be.
I'll tell you this, too. You know who's not going to be on my ballot? And because of the games missed, And look, the league wants to say you got to play 65, you know, in the new CBA.
Yeah.
You got to play 75% of the games, which would be 65 games out of the 82. I'm not going that high this time, but I have to cut it off somewhere. Yep. Or otherwise, you say, how do you include him and not him? So I'm saying 70%. So I say you got to play in 58% of the games or 58 games, or I can't put you on the awards. So you know who's not going to be on my All-NBA? Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Devin Booker, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, none of those guys, even though you could look at it and say, man, those guys are all NBA talent, but I just can't do it. I just can't include them. If I say, okay, I'll include Steph,
you happy
then,
with
then how can you not do this?
Right.
You know, happy so with 65?
65, yeah, I think that's a, you know, missing 17 games out of the year. If you play 75% of the games, three quarters of the season, because injuries are going to happen.
And injuries are different.
Yeah.
Injuries are different.
How are injuries different?
I think if a guy's injured, that's a little – see, that's
then,
what's –
then you'd say he doesn't have to play 65?
Well, that's why I thought he should have put it at 70 first. I wanted 70, but I really do think you have to factor in. That's what's going to be tricky going forward.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between injured and load management.
Oh yeah, no. That's, if you got a legit injury,
yes,
and you can't play,
yes,
yeah.
So that's who I think is going to be tricky.
We'll see how that plays out, but definitely,
well, it's definitely going to play out.
Yeah, I know, but I want to see how it plays out. There you go. That's a long answer.
Can I steal one thing, Ernie, before I leave?
It won't be. First of all, don't act like this is the first thing you stole.
I want to steal the toss to break from you. Yeah, I can.
Sure.
Oh,
when we return, a story about soap.
That's excellent.
Chuck and Ernie in steam room. Come and join us in steam room. Chuck and Ernie in steam room. Leave your towel on in steam room.
Chuck and Ernie in steam room. Chuck and Ernie in steam room. Leave your towel on in the steam room.
And we're back.
I miss that so much.
Miss what?
The music.
Oh, you just heard it.
I know, but I'm saying, well, we've been gone for 3 weeks.
Oh, okay. I got you. Hey, what's the number for your answering machine?
I don't know.
It's your answering machine.
Listen, man.
404-987-0330. So give it to me.
0330.
No, you can't just dial that.
404-879-987. I had it close, didn't I?
It's like 987. Really?
See, this is one of your useless talents.
Remembering a phone number?
Yeah, because I'm not going to call myself.
I know. But,
okay.
But people might be asking you, like out in public, Chuck, I really want to leave a message on the answering
nobody's
machine on the that. Podcast.
Nobody's
what
ever
is
said
the number?
In the three, is this year three or four?
And then you give them.
Is this year three or four?
This is year four.
See, in 4 years, nobody on the street has asked me the number to the steam room.
Okay.
But I'm not going to call myself and ask myself a question.
404-987-0330. Here's call number one.
Hello, world. This is Charles Barkley. Leave me a message.
Hi, Chuck and Ernie. Loyal steamer and fellow Charles calling in here from Houston, Texas. My question is for Chuck. Now, Chuck, you're a man of many names. The Chuckster, Sir Charles, the Round Mound of Rebound, and whatever else Chuck happens to call you behind your back. But you've said many times on Inside that you will never go by Charlie. As a Charles that's gone by Charlie his whole life, my question is, why not? Do I need to reinvent my image here? Start going by Chuckster? Thanks, fellas. Keep up the great work.
Well, you know, my name has changed a lot. Paul Westphal, I had actually never been called Chuck until I got to Phoenix in 1992. I had always been Charles.
I thought I'd been Wade for a while.
Everybody in Alabama calls me Wade.
That's your middle name.
That's my middle name. Even when I'm home today, people call me Wade. They don't call me Charles. But now, most people call me Chuck now. I have no problem with Chuck. I've never liked the name Charlie.
Why?
I just don't like it. I don't have no particular reason.
Well, somebody, was there a bad experience?
No bad experience.
Or somebody you don't like who called you Charlie?
No. I don't even know why, but I just don't. Charlie is not Charles or Chuck is fine. There's no reason. If somebody else want to be called Charlie, that's fine.
How about Crisco Kid?
That was in college. The Crisco Kid, the Wide Loads from Leeds, the Good Time Blimp. I read them on television one day. The only one I ever really liked was the Round Mound.
The Incredible Bulk.
The Incredible Bulk. Yeah. I mean, I know, you know, you must have been doing something. You must have Googled
me. I do
me.
A lot of research. Yeah, I Google you all the time, Google Chuckster. Me. Never know what's going to come up there. Next call.
Hi, Sir Charles. This is Nathan from Buffalo, New York. If you drop soap on the floor, is the soap dirty or is the floor clean?
Drop. Why are you dropping soap?
Does that come from? Where does that come from some guy who says, I'm going to call the steam room. I'm going to leave a message for Chuck and ask him this question. So does the soap get dirty or does the floor get clean you drop soap?
I think soap is always clean. Soap is always clean.
What if you drop a bar of soap into a sandbox?
See, now you're just making up stuff. You should never be in the sandbox. You the man who hate the dreaded shower tub combination.
Yeah, which we had in Houston, by the way.
I know.
I didn't fall.
You know what's really weird about that, Ernie? I hadn't, when you said that about 3 or 4 years ago, how you hated the hotel.
I didn't say I hate the hotel. I just said I don't like the shower tub combo.
I had never thought about that in my life. And now, every time I check in a hotel,
the first thing you look at,
I just start laughing. Like when I got to Houston, I just start laughing because I never heard it explained as a shower tub combination. But I know how much you hate it. And every time I walk in the room and see it, I just get a big laugh.
So is the soap dirty or is the floor clean?
The soap is clean. We'll do that.
Is clean.
I travel with my own soap. You knew that, didn't you?
No.
I travel with a big bar of soap. I love soap. Big bars.
Why? Are you afraid that it's not going to be in the hotel? Or is there a reason?
Yes, they started
dermatologically that you need specific soap.
Because these hotels started being cheap, putting little tinier bars.
Yeah, but how about the what do you call the shower gel?
I hate body wash. I hate body wash. And there's a couple times.
So you have a bar of soap that you travel with?
I got a bunch. I always travel with a couple big bars of soap.
What
and let
kind?
Me tell you, because it's like this unique company.
Irish Spring?
No, that's not those bars ain't big enough. Because I almost had a couple accidents with the soap at hotels.
In what way?
Well, when I was washing a part of my body, I almost had a little incident. So I stopped.
What the heck are you talking about?
I almost had a little incident with those lip bars of soap.
Almost lose it?
I almost lost it. And I was like, whoa, that was too close for comfort. So now I travel with my own big bars of soap. I did. I almost had a couple accidents. I was like, yeah, this is too risky.
So, next call, please.
Hi, Charles. Hi, Ernie. Hi, TK. How are you guys? This is Soli from Pasadena, California, single mom. Wanted to know, what is your party music before you guys go out? Charles, before you go to your Vegas trip or golfing with the boys, what is your jam? And Ernie, when you're going to be with your beautiful family or going to have a party, what is your jam? Okay, love you guys.
Oh man! So what do you got, Chuckster?
Well, it depends on if I got two types of music. When I'm really want to get jammed up, jazzed up, and I want to be full of energy, I'm gonna listen to rap. And 90% of the time, it's Public Enemy. That's my favorite group of all time. Chuck D and the Boys. Like when I really want to get pumped up, I'm gonna go with Chuck D and Public Enemy. That's my favorite group of all time.
When I'm out on the back patio or we're cooking out or something and got the grandkids over and we're hanging out, mine's really laid back stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like trying to think who's on. Have you ever heard Mipso? Ever heard the band Mipso?
No.
Four people from Chapel Hill. They're awesome. Great harmonies. Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors. You know, I got a lot of like almost alternative folk stuff. You know,
I've been listening to, for some reason, I have a thing for Tevin Campbell.
Fairground Saints too, also, by the way.
Tevin Campbell, good. James Morrison. Mm-hmm. You know who I'm starting to realize? Chris Stapleton.
Mm-hmm. Hey, PJ Morton, I'll throw him out there too.
Yeah, PJ Morton is great.
Very good.
But Chris Stapleton, Tevin Campbell, James Morrison, you know, Bruno Mars, when I'm just chilling. But James Morrison, man, he's really good. And you know, I'm crazy about Dan and Shay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan and Shay are unbelievable.
What I've found, Chuckster, lately is that if I'm, if I throw on a, like on Spotify, a particular artist, but their radio.
Yeah.
And then it's a bunch of stuff that's like that.
Like that,
I discover folks that I've never heard of before, and all of a sudden I'm hooked on them. So then, anyway, that's
how I found James Morrison.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he's unbelievable.
Not to be confused with Jim Morrison.
Chris Stapleton, man, what a voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed Zach Brown. You know, his song was for my father-daughter dance at the wedding, The Man Who Loves You the Most.
Exactly.
So then I started listening to the rest of his music, and I was like, damn, this dude is good. And then he was great at Final Four.
How about Final Call? Go ahead.
Hey, Chuck and Ernie. This is Loyal Steamer Justin from Vancouver, Washington, and I have a question for both of you. Having signed as many autographs as I'm sure you both have over the years, I'm curious, what is the most unique item that you've ever autographed? And also, if you're able to say on the air, are there any interesting body parts you have ever autographed for someone? Thanks for all you do, guys.
Mine are pretty much standard. And I think, you know, when you have to sign, like signing a bobblehead is
interesting.
Is hard because there's very little surface area there to do that with, but or golf balls
are annoying.
Yeah.
I've signed a breast before.
Have you?
Yeah.
A chicken breast?
No, it's a little bigger than a
ever,
chicken.
Ever sign a,
it was a little bigger than
ever
a chicken.
Sign a bar of soap?
Nope. I've signed a breast before. I was like, I don't know if I want to do if I should do that. But they were excited. They probably were a little intoxicated, and I probably was too.
About it for that answer, or do you have more details? Like, I thought we were done with the soap discussion, and then you went another step further.
I'll tell you, man, that's a dangerous thing, that little bar of soap. You have to be careful with those little bars. Hotels skimp on soap.
So gotta be dialed in.
I have to care. Yeah, literally. Literally.
Are we ready to call it a day here on the steam room? I think we are too. It's been fun. It's great to be back.
And man, hockey playoffs, NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
Next time we do the steam room.
Yeah. Exactly.
It'll be in full bloom.
Yeah. So thanks for being with us, Loyal Steamers.
We're glad to be back.
We appreciate it. This is Ernie Johnson, and for Charlie, we'll see you next time.